And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are on a hump day Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live. Welcome back to the saddle, Steve. And plenty of news and notes going around the league with this COVID situation. We'll be joined by one Judy Batista, who is at the owners' meetings in Irving, Texas, where decisions could be made very soon on how to approach what has become a troubling issue around the league. Seven teams now in advanced protocol situations, and the Cleveland Browns now down 17 players and coaches for their game on Saturday, including head coach Kevin Stefanski, and we'll have to see who can get out of COVID protocols fast enough to be able to play on Saturday. It's a mess over there.
It just came down to that Baker Mayfield is now positive.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a long list of starters. The head coach, again, if we remember, Stefanski missed a game in the playoffs last year because he was a COVID positive. He has got it again. So the league is scrambling. They've already issued a memo that all Tier 1 and Tier 2 staff in the league must get a booster shot by December 27th. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's going to do a whole lot because I don't see staff and employees and off-the-field people as the problem here. The problem is where the players are going after they leave work because that's the problem because they're the ones bringing it back into the building. At least that's what the data has shown, according to the league
and now,
office.
It's particularly frustrating this year as opposed to last year because if the guys are vaccinated, as we all know, we're being told, the symptoms are when you're vaccinated.
Right.
When boosted and all that stuff. When you're up to date with all of that stuff, you get it and it's like, okay, whatever, you know, big deal. Problem is some people aren't. And you may give it to somebody who really may struggle with it. It may, you know, it may be fatal in certain cases. So you got to try and keep it under wraps. If you had 100% vaccination, it wouldn't be as big a deal. Now I'm starting to hear rumblings that the NFL are starting to have conversations about changing what they're doing in the buildings. Because if you got all these guys that you know, a handful or however many don't want to get vaccinated – you know, and you got all these people that are, they're going to start saying, okay, listen, if you're vaccinated, if you get the booster shot, you're out of the testing window. You don't have to get tested. We don't even care if you have it or not. And that really incentivizes other players who aren't to get it because, you know, you don't have to go through all of that.
Yeah.
There's also some push now, all kinds of suggestions being made. And let's all realize, it doesn't matter what the NFL has done in the past, the kind of protocols they had last year, the kind of protocols they had in the preseason, the protocols that are going this year, the enhanced protocols that some of these teams are now going through. It doesn't matter. All of that stuff's in place. If the league just decides, they can do anything they want. They can change the whole rules and say, listen, no COVID protocols at all. We're all just business as usual as it was before the pandemic. No, they can do that if they want. So as this landscape changes so quickly, particularly with teams getting blasted by it, they're starting to examine things like, okay, listen, if we've got a guy that's fully vaxxed and boosted and he's asymptomatic but he's testing positive, he can play. He can play. Because
you're looking at a situation this weekend, potentially. I mean, these guys could test negative back-to-back in 24 hours and be back on the field for Saturday's game for the Browns. But if they're not, you're looking at upwards of 12 players off their practice squad that have to play in the game.
Not just play, like win. They got to win.
Well, that's the thing. And Steve, we talked about this at the beginning of the season. We said, you know, you said, what's your greatest fear about the Bills season? My greatest fear was that an important player or two or three were going to be lost in a critical game that you have to have to A, win the division, New England next week, or to qualify for the playoffs.
Right.
The Browns are in that exact situation right now. In that exact situation. And they probably they're the first. They certainly won't be the last with the way this thing looks like it's going.
Yeah, there's seven. Is it seven or is it nine now? Seven teams
in advanced protocols
that are in advanced protocols. So they're getting whacked really hard. And
I don't think that's the end of it either.
Right, and you know this.
There will be more.
And that's the whole issue with this thing from February of 2020. It's just so contagious. And you don't know how it's going to affect you differently than me and me differently than them. So they want to keep it from people from catching it. But now it's right back to that. And if you're not on it, you're spreading it.
Yeah. And this Omicron variant's now in 33 states already. It is highly transmissible. The effects you suffer from it are supposed to be significantly less than the Delta variant was. But the bottom line is it's a whole lot easier to catch with this new mutation. Right. So and that that's just, the issue that's
my
compromising.
Does
things.
The Omicron, is that what they're calling it, Omicron? Does that test positive for COVID? If you have the Omicron, is that like a COVID?
It's COVID.
All right.
Yeah,
so, but it's
just like
variant,
Delta.
Right? So this could be that. As easy as it could
well,
be.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Judy Batista later, and I will ask her that question. Do they know, does the league have data yet that is telling them most of these positive cases are the Omicron variant, or is it still Delta that's, you know, hitting the league? I don't know if the league has that information, but I will ask Judy Batista when she joins us in about 25 minutes. Bills news and notes to get to. Non-participants in practice today were Emmanuel Sanders and Tommy Sweeney, Star Latulele, and, well, they were limited in practice. I'm sorry. Let me start over. Star Latulele, Tommy Sweeney, Jerry Hughes, all limited in practice today. And so, you know, it was a walkthrough today. I think coming off the overtime game, week 15, I think load management here is taking over. The sports science end of things is saying, hey, let's just back off for one extra day. Got home late, longest flight of the season.
And you know how everybody knows, you come home like on that Sunday night, you kind of come through Monday and you're okay. Tuesday's a crusher.
Yeah, you feel like garbage.
Right. And, you know, so you come in Wednesday and say, you know what, guys, let's do this. How about this? Everybody, and you can, you know this is happening. All those guys are over there getting massages. They're all getting treatment. They're all in the cryo chambers, the hyperbaric chambers, the masseuses, the acupuncture, the stem, they're hitting it in a huge recovery day to day. And they just, let's face it, at this point of the season, I remember this, I don't need to run through that play again. You know? I don't need to see this play against that defense. I know, just show me the film. I'm good. I don't need to go out there and run it. You know? And you don't want to. I mean, you're wrung out. On a short week, it's like, well, short week, like, you know, the late game, it's like, oh, God, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. I totally get it. And it's probably a smart move. It's really a smart move by Sean McDermott. Just get these guys fresher.
So Emmanuel Sanders, Tywan Jones, not practicing due to knee injuries, limited today. Jerry Hughes, Star Latulele, Tommy Sweeney, and Josh Allen, even though it was a walkthrough practice. Coach McDermott said any of the reps that Josh does not take, Mitchell Trubisky will get them. He said in the press conference on Monday that he's got confidence in Trubisky if he is needed. Tyrell Dotson on Monday went on the reserve COVID list, but they did get A.J. Klein back off the COVID reserve list, so a linebacker for a linebacker there. And Tyrell Dotson on Instagram put a message out saying he is asymptomatic right now, so he's hoping that he can get the two negative tests and be right back because he feels absolutely fine. So there's that. The other news concerning the Bills-Carolina game on Sunday is Sam Darnold has just been activated off injured reserve and is going to practice starting today for the Carolina Panthers. Darnold went on IR 4 weeks ago with a fractured shoulder blade on his throwing arm. But, you know, on the throwing arm side of his body, the right side of his body. So when he was initially put on IR, it was said that this injury would take at least 4 weeks to recover. We're at 4 weeks now, so apparently he's ahead of schedule if he's out here practicing already. Is he going to play on Sunday? That's another story.
Well, think about it. He hasn't thrown. There's no way he's throwing the football at all until this week. But if he's coming off IR,
Well, that's the thing, because if you remember, John Feliciano started practicing but was still designated as injured reserve, practiced for a full week, did not play, then practiced for another full week, gets activated off IR, and dressed for Tampa Bay and really just played on special teams on Sunday.
Yeah, he got activated after practicing for 2 weeks.
Right.
But Sam Darnold activated.
Immediately.
Yeah, so I imagine.
There's a chance.
Yes. I agree. Particularly given the desperate nature of their quarterback spot. And we've talked about it at length that different teams have different philosophies about what they'll allow their players to do while they're not feeling their best. I don't know. I have no idea what Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers think about players injured and playing hard and playing through injuries and playing through being hurt and playing through being injured. There's a difference. But they activated the guy.
Yeah. I think that's a sign that they're at least considering putting him back in the lineup.
And they have that position.
And the bottom line is it.
They've stunk.
Well, not only that, there's an agenda here. You got to find out about him now.
Yeah, that's true.
You got 4 games to figure out, are we sticking with this guy? He's got a fifth-year option. What are we doing there? Or are we just going to go back in the draft and just get a brand new young kid and let's go?
Think about it from their perspective. They still don't know about him. They kind of like him, but
he turns the ball over a lot.
He turns it over. You know what? I don't care if he's ready or not. Throw him out there. If he knocks it out of the park, we found out. If he doesn't, he gives us our own excuse, whether he's healthy or not. Let's just find out about him. Let's put him out there. We're set up. We know what he should play like. And if he's worse than Cam, we made the decision for us.
Okay, it's just been explained to me. I think we got this wrong. He's only been designated to return from injured reserve. The actual action of activating him to the 53-man roster hasn't happened.
They gave
yet.
Us the pump fake.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So he's designated to return. He is practicing, so he's kind of in the Feliciano boat. Still on IR and practicing.
Yeah, see, because
he's going to need some ramp-up time.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't care. I mean, they're not going anywhere, it looks like.
Yeah.
They got to get him on the field.
Yeah, because they got to find out. They got to have some semblance of an idea as to whether they're going forward with him or flushing it and starting all over basically from scratch at the quarterback position.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's where it is. We do want to get to Josh Allen's press conference. He addressed the media earlier than usual today because it was only a walkthrough session. So here is Josh, who undoubtedly commented on how his foot is doing, how he's looking towards the weekend.
Obviously, I want whatever's best opportunity for our team to win the football game. But if I can go, I'm going to go.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Hey, Josh, it's Sal. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Sal.
Just take me through like how everything happened at the end of the game, what you were feeling. Obviously, there's adrenaline going on. Going after that, how your foot felt, the 24, 48 hours, I guess, post-game. If you kind of just run through like, the ups and downs, the emotions, how the pain was, the tolerance, things like that during the game as opposed to after the game, things like that.
Yeah, again, during the game, you're filled with an adrenaline. But at the same time, again, whether it was hurting or not hurting or was extremely painful or wasn't painful, again, I just want to do whatever is necessary to help our team win football games. And again, that second half, we made some plays, didn't get the job done. And obviously, the result is what we need to look at and need to work on. So again, we're going to have a really good practice this week and put together a really good game plan against a really, really good Carolina defense because they're extremely fast. On tape, they look really well. They look really good. They've got some playmakers all around. They get to the quarterback extremely well. But again, this is a high effort, high energy, fast moving group that we got to be ready for.
And if I can, with Emmanuel possibly being out, could be an increased role for Gabe. It seems like he just makes plays when he's on the field, including that fourth down play. Can you walk us through that a little bit and how big that was for him to get you on that fourth down in the end of regulation?
Yeah, I mean, manned up backside. He runs a stop route in the ball. The momentum just kind of pulled him back behind the chains. And the fight for him to, one, catch the ball, turn his shoulder, and have the awareness that he's got to go get a couple more yards. It was unbelievable play, And again, if we pull that victory out, that's the play that gets remembered of saving that game. Again, unfortunately, things happen, and we didn't get the result that we wanted. But to see him make that play through some of the adversity that he's been through this year, limited opportunities, one, it's good for his confidence, my confidence, but I think the coaching staff's confidence in him going forward. And again, I've got the utmost confidence and respect and love for Gabe Davis for what he does each and every day, how hard he works, how humble he is, and the type of person that he is. So, again, increased role for him. I don't think he's going to flinch at all, and this is something that he wants and he's ready for.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Sal.
Hey, Josh. Bald Sal stole my thunder there. So this Sal wants to ask you about Gabe Davis. You know, do you look back? I know you can't change what's happened the first 13 games, but as you maybe look back, do you wish as a quarterback that you maybe would have had Gabe more available in these games? Maybe if they had given him more opportunity, because like you said, all he does is seem to make plays. Do you look back and say, man, I wish we could have changed something here or there?
I mean, hindsight's 20/20 for sure. I wish I had all the playmakers on the field, you know. So that's a good question. The answer is yes and no. Obviously, I trust whoever's on the field with us. But at the same time, Gabe has shown and given every reason to prove why he should be out on the field. And again, he just continues to make plays, and we're gonna need him through this next stretch, and he's going to have to make a lot of plays for us. And again, I think it's an opportunity that he's excited for, but more importantly, that he's ready for.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Sal.
Hey, Josh, how you doing today?
Good to see you, Matt.
Yeah, good to see you too. How was the show last night?
It was good.
Good. Hey, everybody's talking about Gabe Davis, obviously, but this could also mean an increased role for Cole Beasley. And I know he does a lot of different things for the offense, but he was so much more involved, it felt like, in the second half of the Bucs game than in the first half. So I'm curious, just like, what changed? Was it just, you know, you needed to throw the ball somewhere, or was he doing something different that it made you more comfortable kind of looking his way?
1 second. Yeah, I think, one, just talking to him at halftime and talking about just some urgency that we need. Again, I was going to look his way quite a bit with what they were doing on defense. He has opportunities, he got open, he got the ball, he made some rack. And again, that's just something that we're going to need going forward is one, guys getting open, me too, getting it to him, and three, making plays after the catch. So he's shown obviously that he can do that in this offense and in his career. And, you know, I think really he's really fresh going into this last four game stretch that we have. So that's good to see. He's healthy. You know, he was banged up earlier in the year, but, you know, he's just a guy that's consistent. He knows where he's going to be, knows where he needs to be, and he makes the play more often than not.
From a philosophy standpoint, does anything change with Emmanuel likely not out there this Sunday?
I don't think so. Again, I hope he can play. It's in other people's hands. But again, just with the guys that we got, they got to step up. I got to step up, get the ball to the guys that are on the field with us, and we're going to make some plays.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Hey, Josh, it's Kim Jones. I'm in your parking lot. Is there any chance you can hear me?
It's a little louder.
Can you hear me, Josh? It's Kim.
Yeah, Oh. I'm kidding. Yes.
I love that you just did that. I love that. Josh, with the group of losses, all of which could have been wins, do you find a common thread that goes through all of them?
I mean, I think it's execution and situational football. Red zone, for example, we got to be better in that aspect. And again, you know, there's a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas in our season this year. And if a couple plays go our way instead of the other way, talk might be a little different. But again, that's the ebbs and flows with the game of football. That's why we love it. That's why we play it. That's why we got to learn from it. And that's why we got to use it to our advantage in the next few weeks, starting again Sunday. With the Carolina Panthers, a really good defense that we got to be ready for. And we got to utilize everything we've learned in the past going forward. And it's only going to help us out, in my opinion.
All right. So that's Josh Allen addressing the media just moments ago. And pretty interesting that he said he'll do whatever is best for the football team to win the football game on Sunday, which basically means if he doesn't feel his foot is up to snuff, he'll turn things over to Trubisky. But he said, it's very clear, you know, if I can, I am going to play.
Yeah.
The question is, what's the divide there? What's the line of demarcation that he'll get the go from the athletic training staff and the medical staff to say, yeah, if you play this week, you know, you won't do anything worse to it or something like that. That's the thing I'm wondering about.
Yeah, if you play this week, it's going to be, and you keep playing on it, it's going to not going to get better for another 3 weeks. But if you take a week off, it'll be much better in 2 weeks.
Oh, well, you know, if that's the case, that could change the conversation quickly, because you've got New England next week, and that's a much more important game.
Yeah, if it's going to heal faster if you rest it.
Yeah.
If you go for hard for 3 hours, even if it's just 3 hours for the entire week, it's going to be a setback.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And then you got to – then, okay, now that it's a setback, now you got to go and you can't do anything the next week. You can't practice the next week either. That kind of thing.
It becomes a recurring thing.
Yeah. So then you got to drag it around like it's a suitcase, and that's no fun.
Yeah. So we'll see where it goes as the week goes along. He's listed as day-to-day and was limited today in the walkthrough practice. We have to take a break here, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by NFL Network reporter Judy Batista. She is at the owners' meetings in Irving, Texas, where they are scrambling to some degree to figure out the best plan going forward to deal with the outbreak of COVID cases across the league. Over 70 players. The Browns, the most hard-hit team, and they have a game on Saturday. So we'll have Judy catch us up on all the latest news concerning these COVID positive next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live, and pleased to be joined now by a plugged-in person with regard to everything that's going on with the league, especially the COVID protocols that have kind of enveloped our world for the better part of the last year and a half, almost 2 years. It's NFL Network reporter Judy Batista joining us from Irving, Texas, where she is covering the NFL owners' meetings. Judy, thanks for joining us. It seems as though things are changing, I don't want to say by the hour, but certainly by the day with these COVID developments. I got to imagine you're like doubling your phone call rate to try to stay on top of this stuff as a reporter, right?
Yeah, the last 48 or 72 hours have really taken off again after, let's be honest, it's been like weeks and weeks and weeks where this was not the big topic in the NFL, which was awesome. I mean, here we are, we got all the way to the final month of the regular season, but it has come roaring back, especially this week. You know, the rates of positive tests have been rising over the last 2 or 3 weeks, which is why they put in some extra protocols in anticipation of the Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
Right.
But this week, the positive case numbers really spiked over the last 48 hours. There's about 70 people, 70 players have gone on the COVID list. The good news, the bad news is those are positive tests. They're not close contacts. Those are mostly positives. The good news is many, many of them are asymptomatic cases. So that's good. The guys are not sick. You know, but the bad news is they're still testing positive, and so they're probably going to miss games. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns coach, was just announced that he tested positive. It's the second time he has COVID. He just had his booster shot. So, you know, the NFL is sort of caught in this situation where they're doing everything they can. You know, and league officials are talking to team officials. They talked to them yesterday at the labor seminar, and they're going to talk to the owners today, basically saying, like, you know, we have to hunker down here and tighten up, because we got through this last year and we didn't have a vaccine. We knew so much less about the virus at that point, but they got through the season on time, and we're so close to the end now. They certainly don't want to have to push games around. So, you know, they're going to tighten up. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I find it interesting. You mentioned, you know, the extra measures that they put in place Thanksgiving week, and then right after, in anticipation of some kind of surge with all the family gatherings that you're anticipating players, coaches, executives having. But this surge doesn't seem to be in line with that based on the timing, because we're like 3 weeks removed from Thanksgiving. Does the data that the league has at their disposal reveal any root cause? Are we blaming Omicron for this, or do they not have that data readily available yet?
No, but what the league always says is that they are generally ahead of what you see in the country. I mean, the country, we're seeing rising rates around the country, right? It's winter, as we know, in many places. People are indoors more. People are in close quarters more. I go back to something Tom Brady, of all people, brought up in training camp. He told a reporter in Tampa that he thought that this season was actually going to be more difficult than last season to get through, because he said people are going to be out and doing more stuff than they were last year, right? You're behaving more normally, as sort of as if the pandemic is over. And of course, the pandemic's not over. And so he thought that it would be more difficult. It turns out he was right. I mean, that's exactly what we're seeing. When we ask the league, the one positive note that the league brings up is it, when they do the genomic sequencing, the virus is not spreading inside the buildings. So that's good. There are not outbreaks within team facilities. It's coming from community spread. It's coming because guys are out in the community with their families. They're going to restaurants. They're going to the movies. They're, you know, doing charity events. And so they're in contact with members of the community, and then they get it and bring it into the facility. So, you know, the question is, what more can they do? You know, are they going to go to mandatory mask wearing in the facilities? Will they go back to Zoom meetings? You know, all the things we got very familiar with last year and haven't really had to think about this year, you know, are those things on the horizon as they try to get through, you know, the final month of the regular season and into the postseason?
Yeah, and I realize it's kind of a touchy issue for the league, but you can have all the tier one and tier two people jumping through whatever hoops you want them to, executives, coaches, et cetera. The players here are the main issue because there you have to collectively bargain whatever you would hope they'd be willing to do. Is there any indication, Judy, that there is some nudging on the part of the league to try to get the Players Association back to the bargaining table to address this before it gets really out of control and we see a situation where you've got NFL teams going to play a game with 12 practice squad players on the active roster? I can't imagine that's a recipe that any owner would want. I'm just wondering, is there any prodding going on to maybe get the players back to the bargaining table? Because we saw them push for daily testing again. The league doesn't want to do that, probably because of the costs involved, but at least they seem to be willing on some level to do something else. Can they get them back to the bargaining table, do you think?
Well, they have constant conversations with them on this topic, especially, and have had constant conversations, you know, over what's now 2 years. So they're in constant communication about how to proceed here. I think the bigger question is, what can they do at this point? You know, they've mandated for staff, they've mandated the boosters. I think it's December 27th.
Yes.
You know, they're not mandating vaccine for players. They can certainly encourage players to get vaccinated and then get the booster if they're eligible for it. But I think the more immediate question is, what can they do in the short term? I mean, this is a problem that's on their doorstep right now, you know, and you've got, what is it, 4 weeks left in the regular season and then into the postseason. We're so close to the end. And so I think that's the much more pressing question is, what can they do right now? Do they basically say to the players, like, sort of reel it in, you know, you're going to have to sort of go back to being in your family bubble and not going out and not doing all those events in public and, you know, that kind of thing? Is that what our team's going to have to say that to players? You know, I go back to last year at around this time, the teams that knew they were getting into the playoffs or that were in the race for the playoff spot, they sort of proactively on their own, right, tighten things up, right? I mean, players, I remember Patrick Mahomes saying that at the end of last season, he basically was going from home to the team facility, meetings, practice, and then home again, like he did nothing else. And you heard that from many players, and I suspect that that's probably for teams that know they're on the way to the postseason or trying to get to the postseason. I suspect we're probably going to hear stories like that.
Last one on this issue is and I kind of feel bad for these people. The coaches have virtually no voice in this at all, and yet their job security could be most greatly impacted by what does or does not happen or by what players choose to and not to do. And a lot of them across the league have had to walk this very fine line in interviews with the media when this subject gets brought up. They're obviously not going to have a voice in what comes down the pike here in this imminent situation that needs to be addressed so they can get through the regular season. I know you talk to coaches from time to time. I'm sure a lot of those conversations are probably off the record. I'm not looking for identities of coaches. I'm just curious if you've gotten any coaching feedback on how frustrating a process this has been, because it flies in the face of everything that they preach to their teams about the team concept, self-sacrifice, and all of that. This flies in the face of that, and there's really no workaround for coaches.
Look, you don't even have to have sources. I mean, Sean McVay said it after the Rams game, right? Like where they literally lost players, you know, hours before kickoff, including Jalen Ramsey. And he said, you know, he was asked, like, how did you feel when they came to you and told you this was happening? And I can't even repeat the word he used, but he said, basically, you got to be kidding me. Obviously, they're frustrated, right? Yeah. I mean, they're immensely frustrated. In his case, they're finding out hours before a huge game with huge playoff implications that his star player is out. So it's very difficult for the coaches. It's very difficult for everybody. Nobody wants this to impact games, least of all the league. You know, and that's why I think they've got to come up with a situation, some sort of solution for how they work around this. The coaches, as you said, are in a very difficult spot because they're going to be the ones who almost certainly have to convey the message to players, like, be careful, right? Like, you got to sort of go back into your bubble like you lived last year. Nobody wants to go back to that. Everybody knows that. But certainly coaches, you know, like Sean McDermott, whose team is very much in the playoff race, you know, they're going to have to make it clear to players, like, listen, this is an imminent issue. It's a problem. It could really put you in a terrible position with such important games. You know, and they're probably going to have to tighten things up again.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but with as tight as the AFC playoff race is, top to bottom in the conference, NFC's getting tighter too. You lose the wrong players at the wrong time, and it costs you a game. It could cost you a playoff berth. It's really crazy.
There's no question.
To think about it.
No question. I mean, look what's happening to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, you know, yeah. They're in the playoff mix too, and I forget what the number is. I think 8 players now, Kevin Stefanski, yep, the head coach. So, yeah, I mean, it puts you in just a terrible spot.
Yeah, we're talking with NFL Network reporter Judy Batista in Irving, Texas, at the NFL's winter owner meetings. And we've got a big agenda today, aside from all of this COVID stuff that's going on. It looks like the 2024 Super Bowl is going to go to Las Vegas, we're hearing, right? It had to be reassigned, though, right? Because New Orleans had some kind of conflict or something? How do you have a conflict for hosting the Super Bowl? Like, push the other thing out of the way. What the heck is that?
So the Super Bowl, so next year is Arizona. Well, you know, it's in L.A. this season, then right. Arizona. And then it was supposed to be New Orleans, except that when they added the 17th game to the regular season, which starts this year, it pushed the Super Bowl back in New Orleans and would have happened at the same time as Mardi Gras, which is the only thing in New Orleans that could possibly trump the Super Bowl. And they just,
that's a party.
The city can't handle both Mardi Gras and the Super Bowl happening in the same week. So everybody considered, and they flipped it now. So that spot is, we believe very strongly, is going to go to Las Vegas, the new stadium in Las Vegas, and then the New Orleans Super Bowl gets pushed back a week. And I guess I haven't looked at the calendar, but obviously Easter must fall at a different time. So Mardi Gras will not be happening then.
Okay. And so, all right, so Las Vegas, okay, good. By 2024, Judy, when this Super Bowl is held, what kind of, I mean, because gambling, sports betting, all this stuff is on a collision course with the league. There's already a marriage of sorts there. Where do we think it's going to be in 2024? I mean, are there going to be lines on the scoreboard during the game? Like, where are we going to be? Bet from your seat? Like, what are we looking at?
Listen, the landscape on gambling has evolved more quickly than anything I can remember. I mean, look, I remember when Tony Romo got in trouble for trying to have his event at a hotel that had a casino. I mean, this has been this has moved so quickly in the last year and a half as more states have come on board with legalized sports betting. I can't imagine what it's going to be like by then. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like with the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think Las Vegas will be a lot of fun, goes without saying.
We saw the diversity, equity, and inclusion memo. I believe one of your colleagues, Tom Pelissero, put out the memo kind of outlining some new hiring practices that they're going to be voted on, though, first, right? Or are some of these already in place going forward?
The owners were told at the October meeting that this was coming, some sort of little tweaks where they can start the interview process before the regular season actually ends. But they have to vote on it to make it official. So, yeah, I mean, this is, as you guys know, a very big topic. They, for the last few years, have frankly been embarrassed by the hiring of head coaches and the lack of diversity of those hires. And it. So they are doing everything they possibly can to put things in place to boost minority representation among the hires. I think, you know, I was talking to a league official last night who said one of the big questions for this year is how many openings are there going to be? Like, there might, you know, it's a good and bad thing. There's some years where you have 8 openings, and so obviously that's many more opportunities. There might not be that many openings this year. And that obviously is good for incumbent coaches, but for coaches who are looking for an opportunity to get a job, not so good.
And then this Washington Post report on Daniel Snyder is pretty ugly. And it's just another notch in a very troubling saga that has, and I'll call it a saga because that's how long this has been going on in Washington. And this is going to be addressed as well. How do you see this playing out among ownership? Are we looking at, I mean, Mrs. Snyder is technically still, you know, she's in charge now of the day-to-day operations of the franchise. That seemed to be an acquiescence on his part, like, okay, well, my wife will run things now. I'll be out of the picture. Where does it go from here? What turn does this take?
I don't know. I don't know that it changes anything within the league. You know, other owners have been frustrated by these revelations over the last, however, you know, it's been more than a year that these stories have come out. They are upset about them and disgusted, and some of them have even questioned the discipline. You know, that was handed down $10 million fine, and Daniel Snyder could, you know, is not supposed to be running the franchise. His wife is doing that right now. You know, and he will return at an undetermined period of time. We don't know what that's going to be. You know, I think the bigger question is, congressional committees are looking at this, and they want to hear more from the NFL about its investigation into the Washington football team. You know, the league says they are cooperating fully. And I think that's, you know, that's the question of where does that go and who do they want to hear from? You know, who does the committee want to hear from, and who is going to appear and what will they say? But I'm not sure anything changes within the league about this. You know, what was in the story that the Washington Post published yesterday was disturbing. But, you know, I'm not sure that there's much more the league is going to do on their end with Washington. I think it's much more a question of does their hand get forced by Congress.
Right. And I probably should have prefaced the question better, since our listening audience may not know that the Washington Post report is basically indicating that Snyder allegedly interfered with the previous investigation into the team's conduct, workplace environment, et cetera. And to me, Judy, how is this different from the Jerry Richardson situation? That's what I don't understand. I'm sure there are differences. Every case is not the same. But it seems to be traveling along a similar path in terms of the alleged infractions, problems, workplace culture, et cetera. Why? I just don't understand why Jerry Richardson was summarily given the boot and told, hey, it's time to sell the team. And here we are with Daniel Snyder, and it doesn't seem to be traveling on that same path right now. I'm confused by that.
The primary difference is that Jerry Richardson was prepared to sell the team. So he went somewhat willingly. I mean, these revelations came and that was it. You remember, it was literally 24 hours later that they said he is, you know, leaving the team and preparing to sell it. And so, you know, was he nudged? I don't think he had to be nudged all that much. Okay. And so that's a much different situation. Jerry Richardson was a much older man. He was prepared to sell. That's not the situation with Daniel Snyder. He is a young man. This is his dream. This is his boyhood team. He wants to own it. He has no intention of selling it. As a matter of fact, he bought out his minority partners, so he actually consolidated his hold on the franchise. That's the big difference, right? He would fight any effort to push him out. And frankly, there's not much appetite among other owners to push out other owners because they don't want to set a precedent, right? I mean, they don't want to lay the groundwork so that if anything ever happens in their organization, that other owners could try to force them out. So I don't think there's much appetite, as much as these allegations and this whole situation has upset people in the league and embarrassed some of them. I don't think there's much appetite among owners to push a fellow owner overboard.
Okay. Fair enough. Judy, you've covered a lot of ground for us. We appreciate the time as always. We'll keep a, we know you'll keep an ear to the ground, so we will keep an eye on Twitter for any of your latest reports at Judy Batista. That's two T's in the front, one T at the end. So, Judy, thanks again for the time. We know you'll stay busy out there.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
All right, that's NFL Network reporter Judy Batista joining us here from the NFL owners' meetings in Irving, Texas. We'll take a break here. Be back with your thoughts on the tweet sheet next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Bills Mafia, you could win a trip to the Super Bowl on us. Just download the official mobile app of the Buffalo Bills, create a profile, and fill out the entry form. Already have a profile? Just fill out the form in your app. One lucky fan will win two tickets to the Super Bowl in L.A., including flights and hotel. Don't miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime experience.
College of Willikers.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet deal. We are not eligible. As
I know,
Bills
we
employees,
don't get, we don't get any of this stuff.
Yeah,
we do get like logos. We got like my OBL
swag
that I got on here.
Sure,
checking me out.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, with you. COVID is still ravaging league player availability. The Rams just added four more players to the COVID reserve list: linebacker Justin Hollins, tight end Johnny Munt, and tight end Jared Pinkney, all added to their COVID reserve list, which already has upwards of six or seven players. So it continues. The numbers continues to go up across the league. It was at 70 yesterday, and now it's got to be approaching close to 90 between players and coaches.
They had over 30 when the week started, 30 new cases, and it's going up. So you hear about all these guys going on. There's also some guys once in a while coming off, but if you're in the enhanced protocols, it doesn't matter if they come up or not because nobody's in the building. It's a mess.
It is. Let's go back to the phones, and leading us off here is Jake in Amherst. Jake, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live. Jake, are you there, sir? All right, Jake, if you're trying to talk to us, we're having trouble hearing you. I'm going to put you back on hold here, and we'll move along to Tom in Buffalo. Tom, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Enough of this COVID talk right now because everybody's dealing with it. I could have gone to a Christmas party this morning, and I don't want to bring it home. So, but anyway, to expand on your opening discussion, you were talking about Allen and his turf toe and whether it's better to rest him for 1 week, 2 weeks. Steve said it would heal faster. So what do you do then? Do you start Trubisky and Webb and not dress Allen? Or do you have Allen dressed also? Because Allen's the only one I want throwing a deep pass. Trubisky and Webb, they could try to run the ball and maybe get away with some jet sweeps, screen flats, maybe use a tight end on the backfield with Gillian. I mean, Carolina's got a good D. I got a lot of stuff here. And, Steve, could you exactly describe turf toe? Because I've had a lot of injuries in my life. But I've never experienced that.
Turf toe is when the ball of your foot, that joint right behind your big toe, inside your foot, not the top knuckle, but the big ball of your foot.
Yeah, I know exactly because I got a bad foot.
Right, so it's when that joint gets dislocated.
That's in the ball
of your foot. Tom, it's when that joint gets dislocated, and then it pops back in right away, and it's sore from that. So you can imagine every time you rock up on the top of your foot, your toes, to walk, it's excruciating. So what they do is to treat it, they have these insoles that stick into the bottom of your shoe, and the front half of it from the middle of your foot up to the toes is steel. It's real thin plate of steel, and it won't let your toes flex. So when you walk, you go up on stiff toes, and you can go like that, and your big toe joint, your ball of your foot will never move, and they tape it stiff. And then they also put that plate in your shoe so you can go. But as you can imagine,
compromises your mobility.
Yeah,
I think.
It feels funky. But if they can get it going good, if it's not severe, you just go as hard as you can, and trusting the brace and the tape job and the insole to hold it steady. Yeah.
And we don't know that it's a turf toe. It was originally reported as such, but Coach McDermott labeled it a sprained foot. Now, could it still be a turf toe?
That's different.
Yeah.
It's a Liz Frank, it's different. That's the top of your foot. That's your arch of your foot.
He wouldn't be playing if he had that.
Liz Frank's a crusher, too.
That's usually a season ender.
It seems like Star Lotulelei has the toe thing.
He's got a toe injury.
That may be turf toe for Star. But
we don't
know that Josh has got turf toe. It might be a Liz Frank.
And they have those midfoot sprains. I don't think it's a Liz Frank. If it's a Liz Frank, he might be done for the year. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a much more serious injury. He's called day-to-day. You're not day-to-day with a Liz Frank. There's no way. But it could be like one of those midfoot sprains that we hear about sometimes. We'll have to see. But basically, Josh today said, if I'm able to go, I'm going to play. And as much as you realize that the New England game carries more weight in AFC tiebreakers, being a conference game, let alone the importance in the division title, you're 7-6. You need this game, too. You're going to need every game all the way to the end. You're going to be biting your fingernails if you finish 10-7.
Yep.
11-6, you're probably okay. 10-7, you might need help.
Let's think about it. In normal years, it was really rare. Once in a while, like once every 5 or 6 years, not even, a team that would go 11-5 would get shut out of the playoffs. It happened maybe a handful of times since they went to the format they have now. But we've never really seen a conference like the AFC this year where so many teams are so tightly knit with this many, obviously with this many games, 17 instead of 16, but this tightly together with this many games to go. It's tight. It's a tight race. It's a tight race. Almost, 10 teams, 13 teams are within one game of the last wild card and really one game of the first wild card. So two games of the first wild card. It's a tight race. So this year, even with seven teams in the playoffs, a team with 10 wins, there may be multiple teams with 10 wins who can't get in. And that stinks if you're that team.
Yeah. I'm telling you, you got to win everyone. If Josh can play, he should probably play. You're going to need this game. I know it doesn't carry as much weight as the New England game next week in the AFC Conference tiebreakers, but overall wins and losses do, and you need as many as you can get right now.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Mike in Erie next. Mike, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yes. I'm a longtime Bills fan, but I wanted to give you my opinion on the officiating last Sunday.
Okay.
And I wanted to see if you guys agree with me.
Go ahead.
Let it rip.
Do you think it's yes. Do you think it's possible that the league is favoring teams like the Patriots and the Buccaneers because they want to see a Patriots-Buccaneers Super Bowl rather than two small market teams like the Bills and the Cardinals?
No.
No.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I don't. I mean, you look at – there's a – I mean, I know it sounds good, and I know it's a great story, and people have been talking about it, and what a great epic tale it would be if the you know, this guy – the finger quotes greatest coach of all time had the greatest quarterback of all time and they were together for so long they broke up and now they come back and they both meet in the Super Bowl. Yeah, no, that's the league doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so appreciate the call, Mike.
Because you got 30 other billionaires that are loud, that can be loud and obnoxious and powerful, and there would be guys like the commissioner and his $140 million salary would get kicked to the curb pretty quick if that got out.
Yeah.
And you don't do it without the commissioner of the league. The owners don't work that way, and you know they're competitive. And while there would be a handful of owners who would say, yeah, it'll be good for the league if we did that, there's going to be other owners that are going to say, I'll chop you up if you try and shortchange the team I put together. Yeah. This is our window. I want to win a championship.
Spending a lot of money.
I'm spending a ton of cash. You're not manipulating anything. So there's too many guys that would profit or get or relish the opportunity to blow that little plan out of the water publicly.
Yeah.
And the commissioner knows it. The league knows. They're not going to do anything untowards like that because they know they'd get outed quick. Quick, so that they can't get away with it because there's too many guys in the room that want no part of it.
Yeah, competing.
And
agendas.
All it takes is one.
Yeah,
not even agendas. An owner. Could be a GM.
Could be. Competing agendas is the bottom line.
Yeah.
Too many competing agendas, which is what makes the league so great, because there is that much competition. We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 803-0550. Open line for you there. Feel free to chime in. Our Twitter conversation today involves the Buffalo pass rush. What do the Bills need to do to reinvigorate their pass rush? So if you have a comment on that, feel free. If you have a comment on Josh Allen's availability for Sunday, we'll hear that as well. Or anything else on your mind, we'll get to your phone calls next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Talking Bills pass rush. Talking Josh Allen sprained foot and his availability after being limited in a walkthrough practice today. Coach McDermott said the reps that Josh did not get were given to Mitchell Trubisky, so that possibility exists for Sunday. We'll just have to see where it goes on Thursday and Friday. Josh, addressing the media today, said that if he can go, he will go. Simple as that. Not resting it in any way, shape, or form. If he feels like he can play and be effective, he will play.
And given the way that game went in Tampa Bay, it's hard to imagine them winning a game without him in the game. And I like Mitch Trubisky, and I think that's why they brought him. And I think they'll play okay with Mitch Trubisky. They may look very different with Trubisky in their quarterback. I'm sure they would. Do you have confidence that they could win this game with Mitchell Trubisky instead of Josh? I'm not writing it off as a loss right away, particularly with this Carolina team.
Carolina's got a
But they got a good defense.
They're a mess on offense, yeah. But their defense is good.
You're going to have to generate some turnovers and do that kind of stuff. But, yeah, that'll be an interesting question. But as we've seen and talked about a lot, this is a staff and a program that if a guy's not 100%, they give him a chance to get there before they put him on the field. I don't know if that same template applies to their franchise quarterback.
Just so everybody's up to speed on this, the NFLPA put a tweet out that was retweeted by some of the national reporters from the NFL. They tweeted the following. The NFL decided to take away a critical weapon in our fight against the transmission of COVID-19. Despite our union's call for daily testing months ago, we're talking to our player leadership and to the NFL about potential changes to the protocols so that we can complete the season. So, interesting stance on their part. So there's that. And then there are other developments going on at the owners' meetings in Irving, Texas. We'll try to pass those along to you as they unfold. As you heard when we had Judy Batista on, it looks like Las Vegas, it's official now, Las Vegas will be getting the 2024 Super Bowl, which New Orleans had to pass on because with the addition of a 17th game to the regular season schedule, it pushed the Super Bowl back a week, and they had a conflict with their scheduling because it's Mardi Gras. Well, can't do Mardi Gras and Super Bowl in the same week in New Orleans. That's a little too much.
That place would go up in smoke.
A little too much. There might not be a New Orleans left by the end of that week.
I don't know, though. Wouldn't that be the time when you wanted to do a Super Bowl?
I don't know how you do it, though. You've got people descending on city.
It's 2024.
That don't even care about the game. They just care about Mardi Gras. Then you get all the football fans coming down on top of that. Holy crow.
You could build enough. You could build some more hotels between now and 2024 and have it just ready just in time.
I suppose. Yeah, so we'll try to keep our ear to the ground on the goings-on at the owners' meetings and pass along news to you as it happens. But in the meantime, we go back to the phones, and we lead off here with Richard in Rochester. What do you have for us, Richard? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys, I got two questions. First of all, the pass rush, or lack of the pass rush,
right,
and the inability to stop the run in the middle, and Ed Oliver looking so slim and trim and quick What about moving him to end?
Yeah, the problem there is an issue of length. He is not a tall player, and he is not a long-armed player. And you say, well, what does that matter? Well, it matters because every offensive tackle he's going to go against with longer arms is going to make contact with him before he makes contact with them. And that essentially renders a pass rusher off the edge powerless because now they have control of your body and where you're going. And that's why you put a player like Ed inside where he's dealing with shorter length players and he can use his speed and quickness to be effective inside.
Yeah, I guess you could move him out there in rundowns or whatever, but you're talking about a guy that would be significantly physically smaller than the guys he's going against.
Tackles are the biggest, longest guys on the field.
You're talking about, like, think about Spencer Brown. He's 6'8", three plus bills.
He's got 34.5-inch arms.
Yeah, I mean, he can stiff arm you. You can't even touch him. Same thing with Deion Dawkins. He's got long arms. It's just a hard thing to ask. So there's a reason the guys play in the positions they do because they have a skill set and they've been trained to do it. And just because they all wear the same helmet doesn't mean they can all do the same thing or that, you know, you can move them around just wherever you think. So, I get it. In certain situations, rundowns or maybe short yardage or whatever, you can move them around and do different things, but that's not what we're talking about. So,
yeah. Let's go to Jeff in Southlake next. What do you have for us, Jeff? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'll be as quick as possible because my phone's about to die.
Sure.
I listen to you guys all the time, and for 3 days now I've listened to these guys calling in about the officiating, you know, the conspiracies, oh, they don't want a small market team, go to the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. I'd want to lay that to rest. I mean, it just sounds so crazy to me. First of all, you can't play the best quarterback in history for half a game and win. And you know, like the last caller before break talking about they don't want a small market team to win. I think it's the exact opposite. I mean, we have a commissioner from Western New York, and I think it'd be great if for a small market team to get and win the Super Bowl, you know? And these officials have an incredibly hard job, and I think that there's missed calls on both sides, and Bills fans seem to focus on, hey, we lost the game, and find an excuse. We got to stop finding excuses. Josh Allen, and the other thing is, Josh Allen can't play two positions. He can't be the quarterback and the running back. And I just, you know, I want to know your feelings on, also on. It seems that we have totally abandoned any sort of faith or anything in trying to run the ball with our running backs. And it just seems like Josh Allen all the time. And so I want to know what your feelings are on why we're not even trying to give our running backs the ball anymore. Yeah. And this officiating stuff's got to stop. Yeah, there's some missed calls, and it sucked, and it was at bad points of the game, but it didn't lose us the game.
Yeah, the reason it came up this time, Jeff, and thanks for the call, is because it was all one-sided this game. That's what it seemed like. Yeah, you're right. In other games, there you could go back and say this call, well, it went there, this one, that one. And even if the calls were incongruous, like if you got a personal foul here and you only got an offsides there or whatever, it seems like, yeah, they're inconsistent and bad on both sides for both ways. It didn't seem that way in this game. This is one game that stood out in the nature of the penalties that were not called against the Bills. That's why even the national media, it was the 4 o'clock game, the whole country was watching, and everybody saw the exact same thing. It was egregious. It was wrong. It was a little bit like the L.A. Rams and the New Orleans Saints of about 4 years ago when they had the Nicole Roby the non-call, the pass interference, which
everybody they called it and it wasn't.
Right. They didn't call it and it was. It was a non-call. And
oh, you're
the next,
talking about the, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I'm talking about that. So there was all this stuff. This was a bad game. You're right. And I don't think there's a conspiracy because what Brownie said, it's conflicting agendas. Here's the thing. I'll tell you a story. Super Bowl 25, our team was down in the Super Bowl against the Giants. And I know for a fact that there were guys in the NFL in the properties end of things, they said, listen, we would love it if Buffalo won this game. because what happens when your team wins, everybody buys your stuff. I mean, it's worth, and they were said at that time it was a lot of money. We're talking about like a double digit, big, huge bump in our bottom line with our end of the business because the small market team won. And they would win fans and their stuff would sell and all that. Nobody's going to buy more Giant stuff because it's a New York, you know what I mean? They sell all that stuff anyway. But a small market team winning is actually a boon financially for the NFL properties end of the business. So there's all kinds of conflicting agendas. So that's why the league, I mean, they run it as fair as they can possibly run it. Certainly the officials that officiate the games are human beings, and for whatever biases and problems and this and that and the other they have to live with, I get it. But so the human error is always going to be there. But I do not – there is no big, super dark conspiracy about what goes on, because there can't be, because it will always – somebody always going to find out. And when they find out, the whole league is dead.
Yeah, the jig is up.
The jig is up and you're dead. You'll never gain the credibility of the country again.
Time now for us to turn to Panthers radio color analyst Jim Zocchi, who joins us to give us the 411 on the Carolina Panthers as the Bills get set to take them on here in Week 15 at Highmark Stadium on Sunday. All right, Jim, so let's jump into this matchup right away. Obviously, you guys are coming in with a roster that looks dramatically different than it did at the beginning of the season, particularly at quarterback, obviously at running back with Christian McCaffrey out for the season. There have been changes at the coaching level also, with Brady no longer the offensive coordinator. How has this team maybe morphed and changed the most as you have seen it on the offensive side of the ball?
I think, with the offense, obviously McCaffrey this is year two of the Matt Rhule era and year two of Christian McCaffrey missing most of the games. He'll only have played in 10 games over the past two seasons. And that's the big thing is, you build your offense around this centerpiece that you're spending $16 million a year on, and you've not had him basically for various injuries over the past two seasons. So that's the biggest one. The offensive line just really hasn't gotten cohesive throughout the season, so that's been an ongoing issue by and large as well. And you mentioned quarterback. I mean, we start with Sam Darnold. Who could have envisioned we'd be talking to you about Cam Newton and the Panthers rolling in at this time of year to play against the Buffalo Bills? So as you said, it's been kind of all across the board with a lot of surprises, and then changing offensive coordinators during the bye week a week and a half ago. I mean, you couldn't really have much more change than that with the offensive side.
And then just with quarterback specifically, I know the platoon has begun. I saw Cam Newton got 75% of the snaps last week. P.J. Walker gets the remaining 25. Are we expecting that kind of balance for the most part going forward?
Yeah, hard to say. I think it's a flow of the game kind of thing, honestly. Like the Washington game a couple weeks ago, P.J. didn't play because Cam was playing well and had three touchdown drives. And then struggled mightily in Miami two games ago and then had some issues again this past game that we just had with Atlanta. So I think P.J. is more like if they feel like they need a spark, a change of pace, a package of plays, I think we'll see that. But I don't know that it's necessarily premeditated. I do think he's up and ready and available if they want to use him. But if things are going well, they're not going to change it just because it's P.J. Walker time.
And then with Matt Rhule, I know some of the boo birds are coming out now. Some of the more critical fans are saying, well, maybe we should move on from this guy. I mean, I know they're under 500, but they're not out of the NFC playoff race. So inside the building, what is the conversation like? I mean, do they feel like they're in this thing?
I'll tell you, they have this really 1-0 mentality each week. So I can tell you, as far as if you're asking what the organization thinks, they're focused on Buffalo this week. And that's what you got to do. I mean, this team is 5-8, and you start looking at if you win out, you're 9-8, that might get you in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So really, they just got to focus on playing good football this week. And if they have a successful result, then you can look at the next one. But I mean, when you've lost 8 of your last 10, I don't think they're walking around making playoff plans right now. They got to figure out how to play good football this week. New offensive coordinator. They've only had Cam here like 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. And so they're trying to really, just get things together where they can get a win. They've been close in some of these games, and Miami was not one of those games, but they got to figure out how to play four quarters of football.
And then with all of the turmoil on the offensive side of the ball, how much more complicated does it get if DJ Moore is unable to return from the hamstring injury?
Yeah, I think, yeah, we'll see, first of all, as the week goes on. But I think, you know, he's day-to-day, but he did come back and play last week. Things could change. I think he'll probably play. But that's a big one, obviously. He's a number one receiver by far, when you look at the stats especially, but even just the way he's relied upon. And with each quarterback, he's been their go-to guy, much more than Robbie Anderson. This was Robbie's best week this past week. But, yeah, DJ's critical, especially the catch after the run after the catch, I should say, because especially, you know, get cold weather, things like that. If you can make a shorter pass into a bigger pass play, you know, DJ's a strong runner of the football after he catches it.
And then with the running game in the absence of McCaffrey, what kind of back is Chuba Hubbard?
Yeah, Chuba can do a lot of the skill set things that McCaffrey can. You can throw to him somewhat. He can run between the tackles as well. So he's got a well-rounded game for being a rookie running back. So you don't think stylistically you have to change anything. You know, the big change has been the return of Cam and with the RPOs and the zone reads. And he ran it 10 times last week, 47 yards. He was actually the top rusher for the Panthers in the game against Atlanta last week. So that's the number one thing, is the threat of Cam. And, you know, he can either hand it off to Chuba, keep it, and it makes defenses accountable for not just, you know, what Chuba's doing, but keeping an eye on Cam if he might keep it and run.
I know on the defensive side of the ball, Hassan Reddick's put a nice season together in terms of sack totals and the like. And, you know, Stephon Gilmore is in the fold now and has pretty much settled in. What has Gilmore's impact been like on the back end for this defense thus far?
Yeah, he's been playing, you know, a percentage of snaps that were kind of in, say, the 60% range. He played 100% of the snaps last week. So obviously got a former defensive player of the year. He seems like he's healthy. And then you just get the communication and veteran leadership that comes with a guy that's been around the league as long as he has. So that's huge. We lost Dante Jackson after the last game prior to Atlanta, yeah. Miami. And Dante was the other starter there. So his emergence as far as being healthy coincides with losing a starting cornerback in Dante Jackson. So you kind of lose one, unfortunately, to put the other one in there. But they got A.J. Boye, who's been playing a lot of nickel. He can play out on the outside a little bit as well. And you know, C.J. Henderson's been kind of the wild card. He only played 25% of the snaps this past week, but they traded a third-round pick and a starting tight end and Dan Arnold to Jacksonville to get C.J. Henderson, a former top 10 pick from 2020. And he did, you know, again, they didn't use him a lot in this past game. They view him as more of a long-range play, maybe something more for next year, but really needed Stephon Gilmore to step up and actually play football for them right now.
And then I remember when Jeremy Chinn came out, he looked like a Swiss Army knife type of safety. Are they utilizing him that way? How are they using Chinn within the scope of the defense there?
He's been playing more like a true safety. He'll play some box safety in the run game when they think they need it. He had 13 tackles last game, so he actually was on the field a lot and played well. And so I feel like he's getting more comfortable with this, as you said, kind of restructured role, more of a traditional role at safety this year, where last year he was more of a hybrid linebacker. So, again, they'll play him down in the box and obvious running plays, and they'll blitz him here and there. So they'll kind of move him around, but not as much as they were doing last year.
And then just with the defense, you know, statistically carrying the day for them, it would seem, in most games, I don't think it's an oversimplification to say the fits and starts on offense have been the Achilles heel here. Would I be wrong in assuming that? I mean, I've only seen a couple of the games to this point, but it just seems like all the turmoil over there is what has compromised this season more than anything else.
Yeah, it's shared. It's mostly been on the offense, but you know, they expect their defense to outperform their offense. So yeah, if the defense plays well, that's okay. They need to play really, really well, like great, because the offense of what you're saying is kind of the fits and starts. We start out well with a good opening drive, a lot of games, and then points can be difficult to come up with. Or in the case of last week, give up a pick six and make that hole even bigger for the defense. And so what we're seeing with the defense is third down conversion rate is where they need to play better football. They gave up 50% against Atlanta last week, and the two previous weeks were 40%. And so you look at their yardage stats and some of that stuff, it's really gaudy, like top two, top three in these areas, but a lot of that was built over the first 10 weeks of the season. So there have been some breaches. They've been hitting the running game a little bit more lately overall, and again, get off the field on third down. Did not have a quarterback sack against Matt Ryan, of all people, last week, who was sacked five times by Tampa Bay the week before. Yeah. So the pressure is not always as consistent as the overall stats of the season may indicate.
And then, Jim, what are we to – make of the Cam Newton return. Obviously, they were in a desperate situation, but this was – nobody had any preconceived notions that they were getting the same Cam Newton in his prime when he returned, right?
No, and it was a nice fit from the standpoint of it appears to me Cam wanted to come back as a starter somewhere, and teams weren't willing to do it. I think he had some opportunity to be a backup while he was sitting at home after New England let him go. I think Seattle and Houston talked to him, but you know, he views himself as more of a starter, or at least the guy's got a good chance to start every week. And then when Sam Darnold went down for an extended period of time, you know, that opened the door to create a starting situation for Cam. And they're paying him starter's money, about $10 million that he could make over the back half of the season you're coming in. But he's been inconsistent. So he's come in, and I think he's at just over 58% completion, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Still a big running threat. But, again, at this point, the jury's still out. We'll see what he can do over the next 4 weeks. He's a young guy. He's 32, which for a quarterback is not that old. But he has been, as you kind of alluded to, inconsistent as far as a passer of the ball.
Yeah, and, Jim, I bring this up because I think there are Bills fans that look at Josh Allen's game, the problems with the run game up here. Josh Allen is essentially the run game and the pass game. And I think some fans harbor concerns that that is not sustainable long term. And they often use Cam Newton as the quintessential example, a guy that got old fast because of all that was put on his plate, you know, with his read option runs, a lot of short yardage hits that he's taken over the years. Can you just speak to the toll, the physical toll that Cam Newton's style of play put on his body and might be partly at least responsible for the decline in his play and production?
No, I think it's valid. And, you know, Cam's been around, like I said, 11 years, so he's got a lot more years than Josh Allen.
Right.
But those hits add up. And not even just the hits, because I think Cam has always taken more big hits in the pocket than he has in the open field. He can control the outcome of sliding, running out of bounds, just averting a play by throwing himself to the ground. And Josh Allen could do the same, although I've seen him, you know, obviously put his body out there and extend it. I would recommend to him not to do that. It's not worth it in the big picture to get that. Unless you're in a playoff game in the fourth quarter,
right.
I would not recommend doing that because it does take that toll. And I always look at, say, a quarterback's age, someone like Cam or Josh Allen, you've got to almost view them as a hybrid running back tight end age. Like, what does a 32-year-old running back look like? What does a 32-year-old tight end look like? And not just a pure quarterback. And that's how I kind of view it with guys like that, as far as if they're what they're creating as far as defenses having trouble with them is that escapability and running. If that's taken away, they become one-dimensional. Obviously, it cuts down on just how overall performance goes for them.
Jim, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate you kind of bringing us up to speed on the Panthers and their state of affairs here with a few games left to play. Thanks for joining us here. All right, that's Jim Zocchi from the Panthers Radio Network helping us out, getting us up to speed on what we can expect from Carolina on Sunday. Speaking of Sunday's game, the Bills would like to thank this week's game sponsor, Independent Health. Independent Health, you deserve the red shirt treatment. Steve and I are going to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your phone calls. So if you're online and on hold at 803-0550, stay right where you are. We will get to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve was out of town yesterday. We mentioned this on the show yesterday on how Bills fans, in an effort to draw attention to the lack of penalties called against the Bucs and some of the questionable penalties called against the Bills, particularly in overtime, decided to band together and send $17 donations to the Visually Impairment Advancement of Western New York.
They're up,
and Steve's got an update on the money.
The total is over $20,000 has been raised in $17 increments.
Yeah.
For the visually impairment advancement.
Yeah.
Organization, over $20,000, and that's just counting the $17 donation.
Turn a negative into a positive.
Brownie, you said it. That is absolutely savage.
It is savage.
It is savage.
And
by Bill
Mafia. I love every bit of it.
I am here for it. Just the $17 donations over 20 grand. Visually Impaired Advancement of Buffalo. The $17 increments on behalf of the blind officiating in the Bucks Bills game last Sunday night.
God. Isn't that great? That I love it. It's so clever.
Absolutely delicious.
So clever.
That is great.
Let's get back to those fans on the phone lines at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We go down to South Carolina to talk to Jay. Jay, what do you have for us?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I want to do it. Trust me, talking about the pass rush, some old names that I want to talk about because I think we're lacking on that, like Sam Adams, Ted Washington, compared to Harrison and Starr. I like Harrison a lot. And kind of your thoughts on that at first?
Yeah, I mean, the league has drifted away from the gigantic interior defenders because it has become such a passing league. You know, 20 years ago, when those guys were playing, you know, it was a different game. The run game was still very much a part of the majority of offenses across the league. Running backs were routinely putting up 1,300, 1,400-yard seasons, and they had to be stopped. And you needed big, girthy guys inside to handle two blockers so your linebackers could run and hit and bring tacklers down not far beyond the line of scrimmage. Then the passing took over and is the majority of how offenses move the football. And defenses said, well, I can't have a 345-pound two-down player when they're throwing on first down.
That's right. And that's one of the things. You talk to people, and we've had Ted Washington on the show, and I think he's a Hall of Fame caliber player without question. For the 16 or 17 years he was in the National Football League, the defense that he played on was never out of the top five in rush defense. Yeah. Never. And he was the reason for, he was a big reason for it. The problem with his Hall of Fame candidacy, so I've come to know, is the fact that he came out on third down. He can't. Yeah. He couldn't rush the passer. And that's, you know, so that's why they're looking now for, it's a delicate balance. You want guys that can stop the run, but you want them fast and athletic enough to run, to really run, and
or
cover
at least
a lot of
push
ground.
The pass, push the pocket.
Yeah, they got to be able to rush the passer, or to drop into coverage and zone blitz schemes. They got to be able to run sideline to sideline.
You're talking like the Richard Seymours, the Helodinatas,
right? You're looking for athletic quarterbacks, and you're looking at teams that will run or pass on any down you can name. So you got to have more versatile athletes. The bigger and they can be big, that's fine, but they also got to be able to run and run and move and all that, and those guys are rare.
Yeah, they're rare. I mean, you're talking to like Calais Campbell, Richard Seymour, and Helodinatas. What's that, three in the last 15 years?
What else you got, Jay?
I was thinking your thoughts. I know it's come up. Edmonds and his leverage. Why can't we put him on the outside? I understand his capabilities, but I think Medovich, with his leverage and maybe stopping the run, might be more beneficial. So we put him on left side, right side, a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and thanks for the call, Jay. Tremaine Edmonds was essentially a strong side backer who got up on the line a good deal in college at Virginia Tech. He had never played middle linebacker before. He's been there going on four seasons now here with the Bills. Is he long for that position? Probably. Does he have the length to play outside? I think he does. I just don't see this organization changing course with him necessarily, unless something comes down the pike where they're in a position to draft a middle linebacker, believe he could be more suited or limited to just that type of role, and they choose to take an athletic phenom in Tremaine Edmonds and decide to move him. I think that's the only thing that changes the conversation there.
That's right. I don't think they're going to move him, change his position. Certainly, his physical build is completely different than anything you see in most inside linebackers.
And he's
no
high cut,
about it.
You know, so leverage can be an issue sometimes.
Yeah. And I get it, too. Sometimes he goes in, it seems like he gives himself up on the run game to, you know, take on a blocker, not try to play off the blocker to make the tackle. And you can look back at that block, the tackle he missed inside on Fournette on the short yardage. He just clean miss the guy. You know, middle linebackers don't do that very much. His skill set is built more for a team that drops him into coverage more so than moves him
and
up.
And he's very good at that.
He's good at that. And he's also long. He's gifted at that physically. He's got traits that make him especially good for that. So I think when this team is playing the way they want it to play, you don't want anybody else except Tremaine Edmonds inside. But, you know, over the last – you know, when this offense fails to score, or when you get a team that can really grind it out in the run game, and you can't stop him, can't force him into throwing the ball, then he becomes something different than what he is when the defense is playing the way it's supposed to play.
Yeah.
Offenses can force him into doing things that he's not that good at.
Back to the phones and to Mike in Orchard Park. Mike, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, hi, guys. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
You know, the comeback that we saw on Sunday was pretty monumental. And, you know, when you look at comebacks of that type, you could sometimes trace it to turnovers, fewer mistakes, perfect execution, sometimes luck, and then there's coaching. And I know Coach McDermott has been getting a lot of criticism lately in regards to his coaching expertise. And I just wanted your take, Steve, primarily yours from your playing days with, with the Bills. How do you rate Coach McDermott in terms of his ability to motivate? From what you know, does he have the ability to intensify his voice? Does he show anger, emotion? Does he challenge his players? Does he challenge their athleticism? I'm just curious as to what role you think this played in Sunday's comeback. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting question because there's a number of ways, like you alluded to, there's a number of ways that coaches use techniques that coaches use to motivate. Here's one thing that I've noticed as well. Coaches do their best to motivate a certain type of player. They click with certain players with certain type of personalities. If you've got these guys that are like, you know, if you got these guys that you don't know where they're going to do in their off time, you just hope they show up on time. You know, the guys that, you know, they may end up, you might have to bail them out on Sunday morning to get them to the game on time. That I'm exaggerating to make a point, but you get my point. Guys who are not the kind of guy you take home to meet mom. There's a way to motivate those guys. There's also a way to motivate the guys that, you know, have the wife and the kids, their mortgage, and they're upstanding guys, and they're all these kind of guys. There's ways to motivate them. When you get a mix of those guys, you got to find a way to reach all of them. And coaches and GMs, they tend to look for guys with similar traits. You can look at this team, and you see, you know, they got a lot of stellar, high-character guys on this squad. So the techniques that work on those guys are what Sean McDermott will try to use to motivate those type of guys. You don't have any guys that, you know, that are arrested. You know, you don't have guys like that. You don't have guys that have anger management issues. You don't have guys that have authority issues. You don't have guys like that. You got a lot of guys that really put their nose down and work hard. Great, sweet guys. They're wonderful, but you got to find a way to motivate those guys. So it's different for every team. Marv Levy used to say, listen, if I have to motivate you, I got the wrong guys. And that in and of itself was a motivator for a lot of us. I was like, listen, I don't need him. I can do it myself. I'm ready. Let's go. You know, you got to get yourself ready. And appealing to that in every single guy is what you want. You also want to hire guys, if you can find them, that are like that. They don't need to be motivated. I don't need you to tell me how to get ready to play. I got it. Let's go. Guys like that. So for the 53 or, you know, basically, you know, the 70 guys that are in the building, Sean McDermott has to look at each of them and find what does it for them and strike those chords with 70 different people plus 25 guys on a coaching staff.
Well, and I think that he's not a button pusher. Bill Parcells was a button pusher.
That's right.
You know, he's got Brian Cox in the locker room, and he walks in and he drops a gas can next to his locker stall, and he goes, what the hell is that? And he says, somebody said you were just about out of gas for the rest of the season, so I thought I'd help you out. And he just walks out of the locker room.
Right. Some guys.
That's a button pusher.
Some guys respond to that. Some guys.
Right, but that's not Coach McDermott. And, what Coach right. McDermott usually does is he tries to find coaches for his staff that bring energy. They motivate. They actively motivate the guys they're dealing with every single day. They invest the most time in those players at their position. So he tries to have them pull it out of them by demanding. That's not to say the coach right. doesn't demand things, but he's not the guy leaning on him every single day. He's the overseer.
Right.
He sets the tone, and he lays out the process. The coaches deal with the details and the motivation.
Every team is different in that regard. That's what makes it culture. That's what makes every coach unique. But usually it's commonplace around the NFL. Every morning, head coach stands up in front of a team meeting and gets the day started. Say, hey, okay, here's where we are today, guys. We're going to do A, B, C, and D. And a lot of times that's all it is. It's housekeeping. Hey, don't forget, you know, you got this going on today. You got that going on today. Make sure you're there for that. And make sure you look out for this and da-da-da-da. That's it. Okay, break down into meetings. Or he's got a video that he shows, hey, guys, I want you to see this. Look at this. Look what happened here. And he'll show a video of some type, either something that has nothing to do with football that says something about the human emotion and gets guys like we can all relate to it, like we see on social media, these videos that go viral or whatever. Some coaches will have some made up for them specially done, or they'll find one. Or they'll have somebody who we've heard numerous times come in. Doesn't happen as much under COVID because you can't get the guy in the building. But they'll have somebody come in and tell their story for 10 minutes. You know, a la Pancho Villa. Right? So everything is on the table, and it's up to the head coach to explore every avenue he has to put his arm around the shoulder of every guy in the building once a day and say, hey, we need you, and you're important, and let's go. We need you to be motivated. That's the job of every head coach. And Sean McDermott does that for some guys, and other guys, he drops a can of gas next to their, you know. Or
I don't know if he's that kind of a button pusher.
No, I don't think so either.
Because he doesn't even go near the line of negative reinforcement.
Though,
it's all about positive reinforcement.
I'll say this, though. Somebody, maybe it was Sal or maybe it was you this morning that asked Sean McDermott, do you need more out of your defensive line? He said 100%.
Yep.
There's some coaches that'll make it public.
Well, he'll give it to him straight.
It's not like they haven't heard it from him.
Yeah, he's probably not saying anything public
that
he hasn't already told them.
That's exactly right.
We have to break here. When we come back, Steve and I will wrap it up. We'll see if we have time to get to a couple more phone calls here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Welcome back to One Bills Live. I want to squeeze in a couple more phone calls here for guys who've been waiting patiently. We go to Albert in West Seneca. Albert, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Some of the teams like that, Tennessee has a running back, Henry. Do you think would help Buffalo Bills for a larger running back? I know Singletary's real good, and I know Moss, but I think we need somebody a little bit bigger. It takes some of the pressure off Allen and, you know.
Well, we'll see. Albert, I'll tell you, there's a sentiment going around that, yeah, the Bills have abandoned their run game or don't spend enough time on it, or it's just a complimentary piece. I get it. And their draft picks would probably say that, yeah, they take running backs in the third round in there. They're not going to go up and jump up and get a guy with traits. But if you got to think a player that's more gifted would make you better. I don't know if you want to spend the capital – or the draft capital or the money to get a guy like that. And if you do spend that much, is he going to take it out of gear when it gets tough because he's already made his money? A running back is the most effective in his first handful of years in the league when he's hungry and trying to get to his second contract. And notoriously, when they sign that contract, they evaporate.
Yeah,
that's what you're up against. And I get it too. I don't hold anything against those guys. It's a brutal way to make a living.
I think what is certain is this. In this offseason, the Bills have to find a way to reduce the burden that is on Josh Allen every single week. He has to be an all-world player for this team to win consistently and stack victories, even with a number one defense.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about the offense? So whatever that path is to reduce his burden, it has to be accomplished this offseason, whether it's a better running back, a better offensive line, an all-world receiver that you want to pair with Diggs. Whatever it is, they got to find it because it's not sustainable long-term.
All right, Brownie.
Steve and I are back tomorrow. Got Field Yates with us. Join us at 1:00.